This is ensemble member Randall Arney, and you're listening to the Steppenwolf Theatre Company podcast.
My name is David Newham, the Associate Artistic Director at Steppenwolf Theatre Company, and I'm joined today by ensemble member Fran Guinan, who is playing Sharky in Connor McPherson's The Seafarer.
Yes.
How are you, Fran?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Dave.
Great. Yeah. You are in just the beginning of the third week of rehearsal.
Uh-huh.
And it's worth noting that it's the first week of rehearsal that you're strictly rehearsing The Seafarer and not performing it. Kafka on the Shore in the evening.
Yeah. Actually, I was doing triple duty for a while. I was on Mondays, on my day off, I was doing episodes of The Beast, which is an A&E TV show that they're shooting here in Chicago. So I was burning it at both ends.
Yeah, all three ends, yeah. It sounds like. And so you've put Johnny Walker and Colonel Sanders to rest.
Yes.
And now you're playing Sharky. Fran, maybe you could just talk a little bit about the story of The Seafarer. It concerns two brothers, right, Sharky and Richard?
Yes, two brothers living in North Dublin near the North Shore of Dublin. There's a peninsula that juts out, apparently. And it had been a semi-rural area when the kids were growing up. And it's now been engulfed by the urban sprawl of Dublin. And so the neighborhood has changed drastically. The elder brother, played by John Mahoney, Richard, has this running battle with winos and meth addicts who are hanging out on the street, you know, just outside their garden, sitting on cars and the like. And he'll go charging out like Don Quixote several times during the play to chase them off.
Richard, who is worth noting, is blind.
Yes.
He's for all intents and purposes blind.
He is indeed blind. Yeah. And I don't want to give it away as to how he becomes blind, but apparently that wasn't in the Broadway script. This is new to our production, at least to the published script, as to how he becomes blind. So I guess you'll have to come and find that out. It's sort of darkly amusing, as you might think, for the Connor McPherson script.
We see these two brothers in, you know, part of Dublin on Christmas Eve, just like our Dublin Carol production upstairs,
yes.
Also by Connor McPherson.
Yes.
Sharky and Richard are visited by some friends and some friends of friends during the course of the play.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you now in terms of rehearsal? Just on a kind of basic level, what are you doing? Are you working on individual scenes? Are you sort of stumbling through runs of the play? Or?
Well, we actually stumbled through the first act this afternoon. We're at that point where where the performances have almost reached the point where they're bad. You know, it's we've actually gotten to that point. You know, I'm joking, of course. We're almost memorized. We're at the point now where it's the lack of memorization that's actually holding us back right now. So the next few days we're going to spend probably a lot of time doing homework and memorizing it, because actually the concepts and the, you might say, we're starting to get the music of it in our bodies and just need to be able to start running it now in order to actually discover new things about the characters and the scenes themselves. So the next few days will be very interesting. We're going to start working on the second act rather intensely tomorrow. And I would guess by the weekend we should probably be able to do a fairly presentable run-through.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that you mentioned music, and it's sort of in the same breath as memorization. Because does that make it easier with a play like this, where there's a dialect that has a cadence and a rhythm and a kind of music to memorize, or do you find it much the same as others?
The Dublin dialect is much flatter and far less musical than you'll find in the West Country or beyond the pale, as the term goes. Barry Fitzgerald, for instance, from, you know, Going My Way, mm-hmm. has an Irish dialect like this, and what's that cereal?
Lucky Charms, yeah.
Kind of thing. Whereas Dublin is more like it's more like this. It's sort of flat. It's very urban. It's very don't mess with me kind of a thing. The term, the music of a scene that I was using was, it's more in terms of the interactions. Once you stop stumbling through a scene. For instance, there's a scene earlier in the play where they're discussing a court case, actually, of all things, where there's a lot of use of ellipses in the script. And McPherson isn't completely consistent in the use of his ellipses. Whereas in Pinter, for instance, you have Harold Pinter is very direct in terms of how he wants it scored. So you have with McPherson, though, the option to either trail off on a line, let the next actor interrupt it, that sort of thing. And we're at the point now where we're trying to decide what actually sounds best, what actually gets the story across best of all. And of course, once you get it all memorized, I mean, you can play with that just any way you want to at all.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting moment in the rehearsal process. But yeah, the dialect does help a little bit. It certainly makes it more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that urban, the sense of the sort of urban sprawl of Dublin is juxtaposed by the particular peninsula that Conor McPherson has set the play in, right, Baldoyle,
yeah,
which has a history of sort of myth and imaginary creatures, nymphs and sprites and things like that, a deep history. And we see these men living in an urban setting and with all the pressures that you know, brings with it. But there is that evening the sort of the presence of the other, isn't there?
Very much so. Well, I mean, in the very first scene, you have this rather eerie ghost story that's told about this man that they all knew, and as it turns out, appears to have something to do with the guest that appears later on in the evening at the house. Actually, you're following a track of this sort of domestic mess that Sharkey and his brother Rich and Ivan find themselves in. And you're following that story, and suddenly there's this sort of otherworldly, well, there's very definitely an otherworldly intervention. And so over the course of the evening, the audience is presented with a situation where they actually see this other world that sort of permeates this sense of reality that the card players have. They have no one else in the room is really aware of what the situation is, except at very odd moments where there's a very eerie sort of feeling.
It's interesting because Dublin Carol, which, you know, the title clearly references Dickens' Christmas Carol.
Right.
It proceeds as three different visits on Christmas Eve, a man who is being confronted by his past, looking at his future and his present as well. The hauntings in Dublin Carol are interior to the man. It's his own self-reflection that haunts him. As we've talked about, this dips into another type of a visitor from another world, perhaps. It's interesting that McPherson's exploring that in both of the plays, and that the sort of visitor on the eve of salvation, or the arrival of the Savior, marked by the end of Advent, right? Advent being the waiting period for Christmas, that the night before is the final chance for things to go wrong, right? It's the sort of last chance. It's the, if you lose it there, you won't be present in the morning when hope is born.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that he's done that so beautifully in both of the plays. The stakes are high for these men by the time we get into the sort of meat of the story.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's interesting that it's... I had understood that in the New York production, a lot of people, and in London, a lot of people thought that we're taking a very psychological interpretation of the play by interpreting that the visitation the Seafarer is actually a projection of Sharkey's psychological state. He finds himself at a moment in his life where he's been presented with an opportunity to actually change his life for the better. And he's been making very solid but inconsistent efforts in that direction. And as it turns out in the end, I mean, it actually works out for him. Or at least he has the opportunity for it to work out.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that way. I think it really brings home to people that their salvation is there in their own hands, and on a daily basis. And I think that's very important for people to know, that there's a chance, there is a second act. There is a chance for people to change their lives for the better. And, you know, despair is not the only option.
Yeah, and that's so interesting, Fran, because one of the things that I think we sense might be holding Sharkey back is an incident in the past.
Yes.
I think that there's a reference to the fact that it's sort of living in your dreams, that you wake up agitated from nightmares. So it's living on a kind of subconscious level. Although Sharkey's trying to make this change, he's still living with something unresolved. And really, this visitor is tied to that incident.
Oh, yes.
And by the end, it seems, well, perhaps Sharkey won't have to contend with that being unresolved. Perhaps he'll move forward and let that no longer hold him back. As in Dublin Carol, Conor McPherson never implies that it's going to be an easy change.
Oh, gosh, no.
Or that it's a complete turnabout, but rather there's a kind of authentic human self-revelation about, I need to take the first step.
In Seafarer, it's quite clear that prior to his returning home, he's already begun to make steps towards in the attempt of saving his own life, saving his soul. And on what happens, though, the first day he's back, he gets drunk, he ends up in the wrong neighborhood, gets into a fight, and is beaten almost senseless because he was a jerk. He just behaved really badly, and he gets beaten up. Now, this is, you might say, this is a lesson he didn't really have to learn, but it does demonstrate that McPherson, even after Sharkey's made efforts toward improving his own life, I mean, backsliding is, you know, and failure is always a possibility. Hmm. And it's the ambiguity of the ending. It's the possibility of failure that makes for the hero, doesn't it? I mean, if there were no risk involved, there'd be no glory. And I think that's the truly inspiring aspect of the script.
Well, I mean, we've heard from audiences how pleased they are that you're back in Chicago and that you've got such a depth of involvement in the season. It's really fantastic.
I'll tell you, I am the luckiest actor you have ever clapped eyes on. I truly am. I mean, to get to work with these people and in this wonderful environment and in such wonderful roles. And, you know, and audiences that are really eager to see your work. It's just an ideal situation for an actor.
Yeah.
And I certainly am grateful that I have that opportunity.
Excellent. So. Well, thanks for talking to us. Good luck with the rest of rehearsals.
Well, thank you, David.
We're all anxiously anticipating performances beginning at the beginning of December.
Yeah.
And if you want more information about The Seafarer, you can visit www.steppenwolf.org. Thanks, Fran.
Thank you.
AT&T is the sponsor of online content at steppenwolf.org.